This talk is one of hundreds of hours of leading Christian thinking. Go to www.euroleadershipresources.org and sign up to get our monthly email. More resources to support ministry are available to you now. The European Leadership Forum exists to connect local Christian leaders with God's global resources.
Today we're going to move from strategy, which is kind of the big picture, the umbrella over the whole thing. We're going to try to move to one of the tactical pieces, and that tactical piece is the budgeting part. It goes via a series of plans. There's a strategic plan. There's a series of plans that come out of the strategic plan, perhaps a marketing plan, how you communicate to people about your ministry, an operations plan, how you actually do it, what that involves, field workers and so on, a financial plan, which includes where you're going to fundraise, who are you going to be your key donors and so on, and how you're going to use the money that you have, and then a people plan, where you're going to get your people from. But all of this comes down on at least a once-a-year basis to a budget. Lots of people don't even bother with the budget, quite honestly. Lots of people really say, well, we know pretty much what it's going to cost month by month. We'll just try to find that money, and we won't worry about a budget. Why should we? It's unnecessary. Well, there are some arguments for that, but I think that there's also some pretty good reasons why not. Somebody said that if you fail to plan, basically you plan to fail. And so it makes a lot of sense to think about it. In other words, if you don't know where you're going, that's just about where you'll get to. You do need to know how you're going to balance the income that you get and the expenses. It also helps you if you've got a plan. Supposing the income doesn't match up to where you're going, you need to be able to say, now, where are we actually going to be able to adapt, reduce our expenses in order to meet it? There's a third reason for those of us who are in donor-supported ministries of one kind or another, because they expect financial integrity. They don't expect us to operate simply by the seat of our pants. They do expect us to have a plan, to know where we're going, financially speaking, and to be able to account for what we do. And I think, probably most of all, we're called by God to manage resources wisely and faithfully. And I give you there a reference. Rather than go through that reference right now, let's move to our first idea. We're going to just actually try doing this together. We're going to start with what I call a zero-based budget. There are two kinds of budgets. If I just step back for a moment. There's a zero-based budget, which is exactly as you'd expect. You start from zero. You don't have anything. And that would be typical, for instance, of a brand new venture, something you've never done before. If you were launching out for the first time into something, you'd want to try to produce a budget, but you have no history to go on. You might have some experience from other jobs you've done, but you've got nothing to go on as to how you're going to do this bit. So you start from zero, quite simply, and you're going to build it up from there. There is another purpose that people sometimes use zero-based budgeting, and that is if you really want to be able to take a good look at everything you do in the organization and decide, do we really need to do this? So rather than saying, well, we've got five people here, they cost this many dollars, therefore next year it's going to cost the same plus 10%, because we'll raise everybody's salary 10%. That's an incremental budget, and that's the second type of budget. But a zero-based budget stops and says, okay, we've got five people, it costs us X. Before we say we're going to raise everything by 10% for next year, do we need all five people? Or maybe, do we need six? Or three? What do each of them do? Are they all ministries that are important? So, we start from scratch. My recommendation is, if you can, use a PC spreadsheet. How many of you are used to using Excel, for instance?
I've got it, but I use it very often.
You haven't used it very often.
You've used it,
but not very often. So you wouldn't say you're terribly familiar with it.
I know the basics.
You know the basics. Okay. Oksana? You know even this. Do you have it on your software, on your PC or anything like that?
Yeah.
That's a terrific start. I mean, it's not a cheap piece of software, so if you...
A couple of sessions from your accountant course, yeah. Doing something quickly with yeah. Excel,
yeah.
Didn't have enough time to explain to
me. Yes, yeah. It's an incredibly powerful piece of software, and actually most of us will only use about 3% of all of its power in what we do. It's not simply just a glorified calculator. It is something that can be used in all sorts of ways. But if nothing else, it is a good calculator. It does add up and subtract and multiply and divide very efficiently. And so that's a great benefit of it. It's not essential. Well, Excel is the best known. It's Microsoft's product. It comes in Microsoft Office. It comes with Word and PowerPoint, usually as the basic. There are others. There's freeware of different kinds that you can get off the internet. But if you've got it, my recommendation is use it, because it's very powerful, but it's also learnable fairly easily by people. As far as that's concerned, as far as learning is concerned, you can, of course, learn just by playing with it. But you probably don't have the time or maybe the patience to play with it. So my recommendation is one of two things. One, get a book about it. That's the cheapest way. The Dummies Guide to Excel is a pretty good one. The Dummies Guides are a yellow paperback, big books. You may have come across them. The Dummies Guide to Excel is very good. Most of their guides are pretty good as far as computers are concerned. That's one. Alternatively, if you can afford it, go on an Excel training course. 3 days with a tutor working on nothing but Excel, and you'll probably be more expert than most of the people that you know. And you'll learn some useful things. As well as learning how to work it, you'll learn some useful formatting tricks which can make your end product look terrific. The look is not essential, but it does help. It certainly helps to make things look professional and good. So,
I think there's a third option if you know anybody that...
Yeah, get somebody to...
Because you can really start almost with nothing.
Yeah.
And then when you want to do something, yeah. And you don't know, yeah. Or just phone somebody.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. It's helpful to have some sons if you've got an accountant who knows his way around it or her way around
it. According to our executive director, is not very user friendly. So, and he's an American, so he says it's something else. So now,
I see. So now you've got it. You've got another challenge, which is to translate from one to another. That's not so easy. It's doable, but it's quite tricky. However, there we are. Yeah, right. Now then, you're going to want to project 12 months. I'm going to just come out of here. And show you for a minute. Here's an Excel worksheet that I put together a little while ago. I said, well, let's suppose we've got a church. We've got a church that we've got a budget for. For church, read whatever your ministry is. You start with some assumptions. We've got, let's start with salaries, because that's usually the biggest item of expense in a people-based ministry. Salaries, a pastor, an administrator, and a youth worker. And we're thinking about a new assistant pastor, but we haven't yet got that far. And what we'll try and do, I'm assuming this is going to be a zero-based budget. We are just starting a brand new church, okay? So you've got to try and figure out what are we going to do here. Salaries, we know that we need these three people to start off with. Fine. Let's think about them, think about what they might cost. in an Eastern European setting, just to keep things simple, a pastor would probably cost about, for per month, about 200 euros, 250 euros perhaps. I don't know what it would be in... Are you from the Ukraine? Probably less in the Ukraine. In Romania, it's about 200 euros.
Well, you say what it will be, and people, you know, we're actually going to be better, you know,
we hope it'll be. We hope it'll be more, but whatever it is at the moment. Anyway, let's keep things simple and go for a pastor. I'll say, let's assume 250 euros. 250 euros. And as you see, Excel just adds it up. And I'll put another 250 here. And 250 there. January, February, and March. Yes, Social Security would be whatever you have to pay to the government for health insurance and that sort of thing. An administrator, let's suppose 200 euros. And these would be based on real data. You'd say, how much does it cost to recruit somebody? How much, what would that actually be? A youth worker, perhaps 150 euros. Youth workers come cheap. And let's suppose that we think an assistant pastor, we might start after 2 months, in the third month, okay? And we'll pay him the same as the youth worker, okay? So we know that for the first quarter, we've already built the first part of our budget. Now then, that gives me a sub... Excel is wonderful. It gives me a subtotal here of how much all of these are. I've already nearly got it. 20% for Social Security. So quite simply, just multiplies that by 20%, adds it in here. And then I've got total salary cost. Okay? And very simply, it's been built up like that. I won't show you how to work Excel, but just take my word for it. I've just put a formula in here. Taking this one here, where my cursor is, 150 euros, you can see up there what the formula is. It's the sum of D6 to F6, very simply, and it just goes on that way. You obviously have to input those formulae. So the Social Security, you can see it's 20%, 0.2, times G8, which is the one immediately above it. You just can't quite see the 8. I wonder if I may dare just to move it a fraction. Yeah, there we go. So here's 8G is where the cursor is sitting, and that tells you it's 0.2 times G8. Very simple, very straightforward, but very labour-saving. Once you've put those formula in the first time, you've got it. So then we might say, well, okay, what else have we got? Well, we're going to need some heating. It's January, February, March. We're going to need some heat, which might cost us 100 euros a month. Maybe by March we can reduce it a bit. I don't know about the Ukraine, but in Romania we would probably be able to turn it down a little bit by that point. So we can make it a bit less in March. Electricity, again, hours of darkness, maybe 75, 75, and 70. And water, well, water, I don't know, 50, 50, 50, and so on. Car expenses, 25, 25, and we might say after 3 months we'll probably need a service, so we might have the cost of a service in there, so we'll add 50 into there. When it does that, it means that the number's just a bit too big to fit in there, so there we can just widen the column a little bit. And so now we've got this, the total running costs, which is quite simply a total of the salaries, which we've subtotaled here, and then added these expenses here. So for a quarter, we now know, we're talking about around 3,000 euros for a quarter, 3,100 euros for a quarter. So then we need to figure out some income. How much are we going to, where are we going to get our income from? Yes, of course. Ask. Do interrupt any time you've got a question, please.
So when the figures change slightly, so we're expecting a service to the third month.
Yes.
Yeah. On your Excel, would you just put maybe a little star next to it and underneath why you're expecting that?
Yeah. Well, actually, you're quite right. Thanks very much. Just to go back up to the top, I made a column here of assumptions. So what I would probably, because, and I should have put the assumptions in, most of them are fairly obvious, but I might put here service in March. Okay? So then that tells me what's happening. There are other ways you can do it. There are even more clever technical ways. You'll find those out for yourself. But I think a column with just some basic assumptions in there is a tremendous help, because then you remember why you've done it. Oksana? May I come back to that? I will be covering that later on. He's absolutely right. I agree with him 100%. But right now what we're doing, this is blue sky. This is blue sky. We don't know what's going to happen. So we're just taking a guess. Now, some of these, how hard are these numbers? How firm can they be? Salaries, they're probably going to be pretty firm. Yeah? We know what we can afford to pay, or what a pastor earns normally. Within a few bits. And you're always going to be able to adjust anyway. If he gets a bit less or he gets a bit more, that's okay. And so on, with all of the salaries. The unpredictable ones might be heating. If you have a very cold winter, we might have 50% more than that in January and February. If we get a mild spring, we might not need any heating. Those, we don't know. But we would say, We've never run this building before. We've never had a church building here before. We don't know what it's going to cost. Let's put something in. It's a guess. We try to make it as best an informed guess as we can, but we don't really know.
Do you need to put a little bit more for the car, not just for the service, just in case?
Yes, quite possibly. And you can always do that. I've just put a number in there to cover diesel or whatever for that period. Okay? Now, we then look at income. And so you think, what are our sources of income? Well, we're going to, in the church, we'll have free will offerings every week. We'll have visitors coming. Maybe your American will come with a party of visitors in February to celebrate the opening of the new church. Great. Okay, now visitors, when they come, are always welcome because they bring dollars or euros or whatever, apart from their presence. So the visitors we might expect will bring something. So let's say free will offerings. How much might we expect? Well, we know how many people will have coming to the church, roughly perhaps. Not exactly. They would go up or down. So we might say, well, free will offerings, we might get 50. 100, as it builds up a little bit. Okay? Clearly, we don't know. We have no idea. Visitors. Well, maybe nothing in the first month. Sorry, I better put zero, which it's just automatically changed to a dash. Visitors, and then visitors are going to come in February. So let's assume they're going to give a 500 euro gift. And then we might get a few casual visitors in March. So we now know, effectively, what we need in the way of support donations in the quarter. We know because we know how much these amounts are. We've got minus 920 there, plus 370, and minus 945. Those are funds that we are going to actually have to raise in some way. So for the whole quarter, we know we have a shortfall of, right now, as we look at the budget, we need another 2,200 euros. We might say, well, for safety's sake, I'd like to raise 2,500 if we could. And also, I'm not too sure about the 500 that the visitors will give. Where are my figures squashy? right? Where are they soft? And so then we'll say, right, now I know what I've got to actually go and do. That's my target. Friends, that's quite simply an incremental budget. It's a piece of guesswork, but it's made a lot easier by having an Excel spreadsheet. Obviously, that's the first quarter. You'll then need to think through the year ahead if it's a year budget. Questions at that point? Okay. Right. Okay, well, let's go back to... to this one. We've done all of those things. We've estimated the income, and we now have our situation. As I say here, if the result's negative, don't despair. Can you increase your revenues? How? Have you realistically estimated your expenses to the minimum? Or have you overinflated them? If you allow for a bit extra on every expense, you will almost certainly have a bigger expense budget than you actually need to have. That may feel good to be conservative, but actually when you're trying to raise funds, it can be very off-putting. Maybe you could find somebody to underwrite your losses for the first year. Okay. Not on every item. If you do it for every item, I would try to estimate realistically, right, for every item, as near as you can to every item.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Quite so. I wouldn't do that. I would try to get it as realistic as you can, not adding bits, and then when you've got the total, add 10% to that. Because otherwise, of course you could add 10% to every single expense, but have a contingency. I say 10%. Maybe it's 10% is too much to add as a contingency amount. But put something in for contingencies. Something will go wrong. But equally, something will probably go right, or something will go better. So if you're actually trying to raise money, raise donations and support, you probably want to get to something reasonably realistic. And overinflating your expectations doesn't help. If the result is positive, in other words, if you look as if you're showing a massive profit, I would suggest you look at it very hard, because you've probably been over-optimistic somewhere. Because a new venture is seldom going to cover all of its expenses very quickly. Especially, yeah. And you'd have to ask, how sustainable is this? Okay. Now, if you're able to operate at a surplus for a little while, that's no bad thing, because you will then have it for the future. This could be good news. You can tuck it away as a reserve. Okay. Let's press on then. Let's talk about an incremental budget, which is the commonest ones that most of us are going to be dealing with, because we know what it was last year. Start with the current year. Incremental means it's increasing. We're going to look at what the budget is for next year for an existing operation. Let's suppose you've been in operation now for 5 years. Okay, and you've built the ministry up. And you start out, hopefully, knowing what the current year numbers are, or a good estimate of what they're going to be. Let's suppose that you're doing this exercise in November for the coming year, January to December. I'll assume a calendar year, though not everything operates on a calendar year. So we can probably reasonably estimate the final month. It's going to be pretty close, so we know what the full year is going to look like. So now what we want to do is to try to plan for next year. Here's our current year numbers. This is what we know. Salaries, rent, heating, total expenses. I try to keep this just as simple as we possibly can. Gifts from abroad, how much we have to find locally. All clear? What's our strategy? Well, we say we're going to grow our ministry this year. We want to grow an additional ministry. We want to start having a ministry for street children. Okay, well, that's fine. We need to think about how we're going to do that. Here we've got some actions that we're going to take, and they're going to give us some assumptions for how we then build the budget up. First of all, we say we're going to need a youth worker, a good one. That means experience, probably, plus somebody with the right heart for the work. So find one of those. What we want to do is we want to provide some nourishing soup and bread 3 times a week for, let's say, 30 children every time. Okay? And we're going to try to get some funding support for that, first of all from the Save the Children Fund, and secondly from our local authority, in Romania, the mayor's office. I don't know what you would have in Ukraine.
Local. They just
try
to get help
for
anybody who's connected with the
Yeah, but let's...
Save the Children is a Romanian...
Save the Children is an international fund. I think it's United Nations. That's UNICEF, isn't it? Save the Children Fund. It's a... Look it up on Google. You'll find it. Save the Children Fund is certainly one that tries to help children around the world. There are lots of them. Actually, it should be getting stuff to support children's work should be the easiest fundraising task in the world, basically.
And it's funny, but not for street children. I mean, just children is okay. Street children are a bit more peculiar.
Yeah, possibly. But at any rate, these are just assumptions at the moment. We'll try to build with what we've got. Okay, so now we start trying to build our budget. I wonder if I can just improve this a little bit. Okay, let's try with this anyway. This was our present year. $5,000 for 2 people. Right? So we know that's our start point, maybe a pastor and an administrator. That's it. It costs us $5,000 a year in salaries. We're going to add a new worker at $150 a month, and we're going to increase the existing salaries by 10%. Okay? So, over here, are you comfortable working with percentages?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody? Yeah, good. So, the youth worker is 150 times 12, $1,800, plus $500, which is 10% of 5,000. That's an add-on of $2,300. We have to increase that $5,000 by $2,300, which brings us to $7,300. Straightforward. Okay, that gives us our salary budget. As you can see, building an incremental budget is actually in many ways easier than building a zero-based budget. So it helps to know the facts about last year. All the more important to have good numbers for your existing year, because it's easy to build a budget from there, or relatively easy. Okay. Rent this year was $2,000. We'll assume there's no increase in the rent for what we've got at the moment, but we do want to add a room on where we can have the kids come and eat soup. A room that will have some heat to warm them up, and probably where we can have a stove to in order to heat the soup, tables and so on where they can sit. So no increase in rent, but let's add $500 for the room. Takes us up to $2,500. Heating this year was $3,000. Let's assume, because it's happening all over Eastern Europe, fuel costs are going up by 15%, $450 to add on to there. Food costs this year were zero. But next year we want to start this soup kitchen. So we know we're going to have three loaves plus the soup ingredients in a week, for one meal. That's, let's say, $10. We're going to do it three times a week, so that's $30 times 52, which makes 1,560. No, 52 weeks. We're saying 30 children needs three loaves and the soup ingredients. Okay, nice big loaves of bread and the soup ingredients, which would be carrots and potatoes and maybe some meat or something like that that goes into it. Total cost, we're saying the food costs about $10. We're going to do it three times a week for 52 weeks of the year, gives us this amount. Okay? 1,560. That gives, this year our total cost was $10,000. It's going to go up to 14,810. That's our expenses for this year. Going on. How are we going to find the money? Well, we're going to put in a grant application to the Save the Children Fund, ask them to support our worker, our room, and the food. If we added those up, justified them, we could easily justify them. There's a total cost of 3,860. So rather than ask for that 3,860, we'd probably ask for $4,000. We might even ask for $5,000. But we could justify that, basically, by showing that there's support costs in there. Obviously, we need to find some way to raise the remaining $10,000 or so. Probably known gifts, and probable givers, and possible givers.
Where did the additional $10,000 come from? Is that from the last year?
Well, we know that we've got expenses of $10,000, right? So we have to cover that somehow. Last year, where did it come from? It came from some came from free will offerings and so on. So let me see. Let's come back here. We had $8,000 from the USA here, right? And we had to fund from the local church $2,000. Well, let's suppose this year we'd be able to fund from the local church, say, $3,000. Well, from somewhere, we have to find another $7,000. And that's the fundraising challenge. Where's it going to come from? And that's really what all of us who are involved in not-for-profit ministry or donor-supported ministries are doing. That's where Jerry Twombly is such a great asset, I guess, in helping to figure out fundraising strategies and so on. But your ministries, I imagine, have already been involved with that in one way or another. Certainly, Wycliffe has. Oksana, have you had...
We are actually at a place of... I won't call it a dead end, but I'm coming for a financial crisis. And actually, I would appreciate any suggestions.
Okay.
For our counseling program, wanted sure...
Have you attended any of Jerry Twombly's stuff? He's speaking tomorrow morning. You should probably try to attend the Leaders of Christian Organizations sessions tomorrow morning if it's that critical for you. Because he's got a full morning doing nothing but that tomorrow. Well, it's just the time here at the forum is so incredibly packed. my guess would be very difficult. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation would probably be, if it's that much of a crisis, I'd recommend sitting in on tomorrow morning sessions.
You mean the network session?
Yes, mm-hmm. I would. Yeah, because he's doing two. He's going to spend 3 hours on strategy for fundraising and the actual development process. So you might find that very helpful if you're at a critical stage. Okay. Clear enough?
Yeah.
There's no big mystery. This is not rocket science. It's not brain surgery. It's pretty straightforward stuff. In fact, any idiot can do it, really. And mostly idiots do. Now, let's come to your point, Oksana, which is what we call financial reporting. It's absolutely essential that we close the loop, because the budget tells us what the target is, but once we've got there, that's only the first bit. We now need a monthly report that tells us how we're doing against the target. Now, in your case, you will probably have to do a translation job. I know, because that's what I have to do in Romania. I have to take it from being here and move it to being understandable from a Western point of view. So, in that case, probably what you need to do is to your American colleague, you probably want to ask him in what format does he want to see it, how much detail does he want. But you can then readily put it into a Western format. But you then need to know what's the translation of it. Which items do I put into salaries? Which items do I put into heating or utilities or whatever it might be? Okay? So, the monthly report tells us how are we doing against the target. Sorry. They're both very useful, but they have to be timely. In other words, we need to know, are we going to have enough money to meet the bills? Is somebody overspending? Has something gone wrong? What do we need to do about it? And so it enables us to do what in the trade is known as management by exception. Looking at the exceptions, the things that are going wrong, rather than looking at every number, which will just be tedious, if it's reasonably close to what we expect it to be, then we can leave it alone. There's no point in getting deeply into it. What we need to look at, what's going wrong? And we really would like to have the numbers by the middle of the month following the reporting period. So let's suppose we're thinking of the month of May. We're now on June the 14th. We would expect, or need really, to have the numbers around by now. If it's coming 2.5 months later, it's pretty useless because there's not much we can do about it. So we actually do need to press for fairly timely stuff.
If you're getting bills about quarterly, like energy bills,
An accountant will do a process called accruing for that in England. Not in Eastern Europe generally. You don't use accruing. Means if you know that you have a quarterly telephone bill coming in, and it's always around £600 a quarter, then when they do a monthly one, they'll put in £200 for May. Now it could be 220, it could be 180, but they put in 200, and then when they know what the actual is, they will adjust the final month to allow for that. So if you'd had 200 and 200 in May and June, and then in July you got the bill, you say, okay, for July, and the bill, let's say, instead of being 600, was 700, you'd have 200, 200, you'd have to put 300 in July. But that's accrual accounting, and you don't do that in Eastern Europe. In Eastern Europe, you use cash accounting. So it's whatever it actually cost. You only put it in then. So you might have zeros in May and June. That's not very helpful from a financial reporting point of view, but at least you know what's coming in and going out. ACCRUAL. Accrual. If we had a flip chart, I'd write it up for you. But don't worry about it. It's not important. But if your American donor ever asks you, explain to him that Ukrainian accounting does not use the accrual method. It uses the cash accounting method. You can ask. Maybe you do. Most Eastern European countries don't, and it can be confusing. This is what a typical monthly report might look like. Salaries are usually pretty predictable. You know what the salaries are going to be. You've got three people, you're going to pay them. Even if they've been sick, you're going to pay them most likely. So, $608. Budget was $608. There's no variance. Let's look at the columns. This month, actual. This month, budget. And a variance. Favorable or unfavorable? Obviously, if expenses are higher than budgeted, that's an unfavorable variance. If income is higher than expected, that's a favorable variance, which is why I have favorable or unfavorable rather than more or less. Okay, because it depends which we're doing. 608, right on the button, so no variance. Rent. Let's say we had a budget of 208, but an actual only 180. Well, maybe when we were budgeting in November, we were expecting a rent increase. We allowed for a rent increase in the budget, but actually the rent increase never happened. It's going to maybe come next month. So the good news is it's only 180. So we have a favorable variance of 28. Heating, budget 500, we had 600. Unfavorable variance of 100. And so on. Here's the food cost for the children. We budgeted 120, but it actually cost 135. We've got negative 15. Total costs, we budgeted 1436, but it actually came in at 1523. We've got an $87 budget variance. The income, we budgeted 1234, but we actually got 2200. That's good news. $966 in the bank, over and above what we'd expected. So our net position is actually more than $800 better than we expected. Favorable. Now, when we look at this, we have to say, what's happened? What happened on the exceptions? Well, which are the serious exceptions? Which do you think you would look at?
Heating and income.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Heating and income are probably the biggies. You'd probably you'd wonder why the rent, and then it's easy to answer. Well, we just didn't get the rent increase we'd expected. We're not worried about it. Heating, what happened? Well, the month perhaps was much, much colder than you expected. We had snow all through the month or whatever, and so we just had to keep it on much longer. What happened as far as the income was concerned? Well, maybe we'd expected somebody as a visitor in next month, but actually they came this month instead, right? So while we've got a nice big surplus here for this month, next month we may well have an underrun because they won't come next month now, right? So that means we have to be careful. We mustn't just take this surplus and spend it, right? Which is the joy of a budget. Because now we know. We're in a position where we're clear on what's happening. Okay? When you go through the review, this is obvious. Why did we overspend so-and-so? The gift, it's actually a good reminder to say, have we actually said thank you for the gift that came in? When we look at those things, it's often a reminder to do this or that or the other. And obviously to say, Are there any problems that we might foresee happening next month? Now, when it comes to numbers, we do need to differentiate between expenses and capital. It's all cash. It costs cash to use it. But there's a difference between, as far as accounting is concerned, as far as budgeting and reporting, there's a difference between capital spending and expense or income. Yes, I'm going to. First of all, operating expenses are the expenses that it costs us to run the organization. The things we've been talking about there. Salaries, rent, fuel. What other things might be expenses?
Communication.
Yeah. Internet. Yeah, internet.
Yeah, possibly. Taxes would possibly be, especially property taxes, rates and so on, that you have to pay for the building. Those kinds of things. Yeah?
Yeah, those are operating expenses. The cost of running the place on a month-to-month basis. Capital expenses are one-time costs which give you an asset of some kind, a building, a car, a computer, or whatever. That doesn't come out of expenses. That's a cash item, and it goes into capital. It goes on your balance sheet as an accounting item. But what it is, it's something that you buy. Now, what accountants do, they say a piece of equipment, something like that, is going to last for 10 years, or 5 years, or 3 years, or whatever. A PC, let's say, we'll assume it lasts for 3 years. A reasonable average. So it costs $1,200 to buy. PC, all the software, and so on. So $1,200 we'll have to actually spend in year one. That's a cash outlay. That's a capital expense. Now, an accountant then depreciates that over the period of 3 years. He says, the actual expense we will take over 3 years. So that means $400 a year for 3 years. And we class that as depreciation. The cash goes out right away, but the depreciation hits the expenses only over time. So in a sense, if you like, we bought it, but it doesn't hit our operating statement. It's a cash flow item. It goes onto the balance sheet, and we depreciate it over a period.
I don't really understand that. So,
right. Let's.
What I think is that when you're doing your monthly budget, you don't show $1,200 gone on the.
No, you do not, because it's not an expense. It's a cash item. Now, you do need to have a capital budget that says when are we going to spend cash,
right?
And you also do need to know if you've got your running costs. You do need to know, if you're looking at your bank account, what kind of cash are we going to need? Well, we've got to, as well as paying for our running expenses, we also need a computer. So our bank account will go down by $1,200. But that's a one-time thing.
Yeah.
And the reason we don't put it into the expense statement is because it's a big item, right? So we want to make sure that we expense it over time rather than hitting our profit and loss in one go.
So when you make a proposal in the budget,
yes,
you still do this depreciation.
Yeah, well,
yes,
you can do. Your accountant will tell you about depreciation. I would recommend that you don't worry too much about it right now. What you do need to know is what's the difference between a capital item and a operating expense item. Again, in Eastern Europe, you don't particularly differentiate in your accounts between the two. You run everything through the accounts, which in one way is a simpler way, but it's also not nearly as good a control method as this one.
Are you saying that?
Probably in Eastern Europe, you'll find they don't differentiate very much. They actually take the $1,200 in one go.
Okay.
and it goes on the balance sheet and then does get depreciated.
Well, alternative way would be to have a column of, say, equipment and have 150 months.
Yes, indeed. And that's really what a capital budget does. The capital budget would say, okay, let's think of all the items we have to buy. We need a car, a cooker, and a refrigerator for this soup kitchen that we're starting up, how much it's going to cost, when are we going to buy it? Do we buy it all now, or do we buy it when we actually have the cash come in, if somebody donates money for a car? What's the priority? How important is each one? Well, if you want to start a soup kitchen, a cooker is going to be pretty important. So you'd probably say, well, that's priority one. Okay. Then you need to think, where are we going to get the money from? Well, obviously you could get it from your general running stuff, but you might need that money just to pay for your regular costs. So if you need a car, you may need to actually do some specific fundraising to buy a car. You might want to write to supporters and say, we need some help with buying a minibus so as to transport our people around, or whatever it might be. Okay? So you fundraise specifically for that. People sometimes prefer to give to a particular project rather than just to support your running costs. It's harder to raise money, in fact, for running costs than it is for capital items. Obviously, if the money isn't there, you can delay or cancel the purchase of capital items. You might say, because it's not like salaries or heating oil, you've got to buy those, or you've got to pay for those. If you don't have the money, basically it means you just you don't get a PC, or whatever it might be. And there's some reading. The top one is very, very straightforward stuff. Incredibly simple. It's actually a small book. It's about this big. It's a nice little handbook about budgets. Well recommended. No problem at all. If you want something a bit more, a bit more scope in it, then the second one's a pretty good one. Actually, I've got a copy of the second one with me if anybody wants to take a look at it. I'll be glad to lend it to you to take a look at. These are all available through... These are both British, I think. They're both available through Amazon, if you're able to get access to Amazon.
Can you say, like, there is a difference between budgeting
There are a few. There's a few different terms, but not very many. And mostly they think much the same way. But Brits, they do their balance sheet slightly differently, and Americans have it on two sides. We tend to have it all in one row. Apart from that, there's no big difference. Between Ukrainian accounting and British or American, there's quite a big difference, I'm afraid. Any other questions? We've not done badly.
Maybe a comment about the capital. It's maybe helpful to have two figures at the end and say, this is our running expenses.
Yes.
For your donors.
Oh, yes.
Because if you give the total figure...
Yeah, don't give a total figure.
They think, yeah. You know, well, yeah. Expenses.
No. Don't give a total figure, because you're mixing actually mixing apples and oranges if you do that.
Yeah,
this is the cost of running it. These are the things we would like to buy. These are the capital items. We need a new car. Yeah, whatever. So keep them separate. Thank you. Yes, that's quite right, Bosco. Anything else, folks?
I guess I'm here because I'm going to have a marketing budget for
yep.
my job next year.
Yeah.
The problem is, though, with that is that I don't know if anyone's actually... We know how much our promotional budget was last year.
Yeah.
We don't know. I would be surprised if there's a breakdown that's been reported, because there's never been a communications officer in
yep.
before. Yeah. So in terms of Yeah, I guess I'm starting with a zero budget, really.
You are, really?
Yeah.
There's some great benefit in that, because you get to say how it gets spent, really. At a marketing level, you're going to want a much more precise breakdown of the... I mean, at the moment, on most budgets, you'd have a single line, advertising and publicity expenses or something like that, whatever it might be for your organisation, £40,000, say. Well, actually, £40,000 is useless to you. You don't know how it got spent.
That's what I've got, basically. Okay. I think I might be wrong.
You might be wrong. Well... ideally, what you want, you'll need to go and make friends with the accountant, take him or her out for lunch, and find out if you can get a good breakdown of that. If you are really keen, you might want to look at individual invoices for what made that amount up. Yeah. It's possible to do that, and that then tracks it really back. So... But they may well be able to help. And they say, yes, we had a PR agency that was helping. They cost £1,000 a month. Okay, £12,000. That's where's the other 28? Well, we had a new brochure that we put together that cost 15. Okay, what were the other things? Well, they were bits and bobs of all sorts of stuff. Right. Now that gives you a chance. Okay, now I know how it got spent last year. What are we actually going to want to do this year? And then what you need is a sense of, well, what's your strategic objectives? What are you going to try and do with that? How much money can the organization afford? You probably won't get an answer on that one if you ask. So you actually need to try to say, what do we absolutely have to do? We do need a new leaflet for this. We want to do some fundraising, so we're going to have donor-focused literature of some kind. We're going to have an event in May next year to do this or that. It'll cost this much. And then you propose that budget to your boss, who promptly falls over in a dead faint when he sees the number, and you start all over again.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you've got it laid out there, then he's able to see, okay, I love the ideas, I just don't like the number. How are we going to get this down to the essentials? Well, let's put it in priority order.
It will.
Anything else? If anybody doesn't have the handout for this, I have a copy here, you're welcome to have. But otherwise, thank you for your attention. Mark, did you want to do an evaluation sheet? Oh, they've already done it. That's right. If you've got your evaluation, do have a stab at that.